is. Very good afternoon. It's Niall Boylan with you for the next hour or so. And, well, today a lot of people are very, very concerned. Carol Nolan, Maddie McGrath and Michael McDougall have raised the issue that the debate needs to be longer in relation to the EU Migration Pact. Don't forget, by the way, please support the show. We try our best to bring you some of the latest stories as well as social issues and many other issues as well. It's your opportunity to come on the air uncensored and talk to all our listeners and tell them how you feel about the stories that are making the news. So please support the show by going to our website, nileboylan.com. And you can go there, you can go to donate, or you can subscribe, of course, to the website. $5.99 a month. It's the price of a cup of coffee, really, for the three of us. We'll share it, don't worry. So please subscribe to the website. Or if you want it and you just want to give a one-off donation, you can. All you got to do is go to the website, nileboylan.com. Don't forget, if you want to get involved in the show at any stage, it's your opportunity to come on, vent your anger, air your views. If you agree or disagree, we don't care. That's what it's all about. That's what debate is all about. The number, all you got to do is WhatsApp 085 122 55, and it's your opportunity to have your say. Now, many people are talking about the EU Migration Pact. Ireland stands to be one of the biggest beneficiaries, according to Simon Harris, of the EU Pact on Migration and Asylum. The Taoiseach Simon Harris told the Dáil as the AIN2 leader Padraig Tobin challenged him on the cost to the state of the agreement and its impact on our sovereignty. Mr. Harris stressed that Ireland will be disproportionately benefiting because so many people who come to Ireland seeking refuge come here from what he called secondary movements, having first applied to another EU member state. Now remember, of course, with the EU Migration Pact, it leaves us in a very tricky predicament. If people come from the United Kingdom, for example, it's already been decided by the High Court, or it could be the Supreme Court, maybe, I'm not too sure. Anyway, it's been decided we cannot return them to the UK because it's not considered to be a safe country. Surprise, surprise. The last time I was there, it looked reasonably safe to me. But according to migrants who come from the UK, they could be sent to Rwanda, which means it's not considered to be a safe country. Part of the deal of the EU Migration Pact as well is that we must send them to a country that are willing to keep them, i.e. we cannot send them to a country that's going to move them on. And remember the deal, of course, that we must take in a certain amount of migrants every year based on how many migrants come into the European Union. Of course, Ireland will take a disproportionate amount because we have an inflated GDP, which means we look very wealthy, but we're not really actually very wealthy at all. If we refuse to take them, by the way, it will cost us money. Roughly 26,000 per asylum seeker per year. That's the deal we're signing up to. They think it's a good deal. They're flogging it to us as a good deal and better than what we have at the moment. But really, what we have at the moment is a mess. So I want to know what you think. Is this a good deal for us to sign up to something that they say is going to be more streamlined? Let me know what you think. The number 085 122 55. Joining me to give me a bit more information on this and the general consensus and what's happening and where we are currently at the moment is John McGurk, who's the editor of Grip Media. John, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Niall. I always nearly say good morning, but it's actually afternoon, isn't it?
I know. Yeah, people never know where to put, by the way. People give out to me when I put 12 p.m. They say, no, it's only a.m. And I go, no, it's p.m. Yeah. Anyway, we get into that argument all the time. John, the EU Migration Pact, it's been sold to us as something that's quite attractive. Helen McEntee tweeting yesterday that she was looking forward to the debate. She almost seems excited about this.
Well, I think that's because they are very keen on focusing on certain elements of it. And I think, in fairness, it should be said that very clearly the intention at European level is that this would in the short term at least restrict migration. Like it is a restrictionist piece of legislation or lawmaking, whatever you want to call it. The aim is to essentially make it harder for loads and loads of people to flood into Europe. That is the base intent, and I think that's what the government is focusing on. What critics are focusing on, though, I think is probably more important. And I would argue the most important thing. I was talking to a legislator this morning, who I won't name because I don't know whether he wants me to name him or not. So I'll err on the safe side. But he was saying, this is the biggest transfer of sovereignty, perhaps, in the history of the Irish state to the European Union. In that what we are essentially signing up to is for people in Brussels rather than people in Dublin to decide how many migrants we take every year. So you were saying there in your explanation that if we decline to take somebody, we pay a €26,000 fine for that person.
That's per year, by the way, per person per year.
Per person per year, which is a substantial amount of money and a considerable disincentive to not doing what you're told, effectively. But effectively, the number of migrants that Ireland must accept as a baseline every year will no longer be decided by the Irish government. It will be decided in Brussels. And here's the kicker. And this is, I think, something people need to understand, is that once we've signed up to this, it can be changed. So the it will then be subject to being changed on a year or another or an annual basis under the European Union's qualified majority voting procedure, which is a complicated way of saying that Ireland won't have a veto. We have a veto now because we are perfectly capable of saying we don't want to go into this thing. But once we do go into it, we no longer have a veto over its terms. We can vote against changes we don't like, but we can be outvoted. So you're giving away essentially your control over the number of people that you accept on an annual basis, and you're basically saying that that the committee in Brussels will decide how many people you take in. Now, in the short term, and this, let's be clear and fair about this, Niall, that might work out in our benefit, because it could well prove to be that, you know, because we're taking in so many people at the moment, that those numbers are reallocated away. But that's a very short-termist approach. And politicians always think in the short term. If you're Simon Harris, if you're Helen McEntee, your objective is not what's happening in the country in 10 years' time. It's what's happening in 6 months' time in the run into the next general election. And if they can say, look, we have, you know, we're going to reduce the number of people coming into the country next year by, I don't know, 5,000, under the terms of the EU Migration Pact, people will say, well, that's a massive success, isn't it? You know, that's what they're hoping, people will say, and we'll get a result at the election on foot of that. The problem is nobody's thinking about what the Migration Pact is going to look like 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road, when we have permanently transferred our sovereignty away.
But isn't it fraught with all kind of problems? I.e., I mentioned some of them just in the opening there. For example, we cannot return people who are on second movement from the United Kingdom. That's already been established by the High Court about 4 or 5 weeks ago. We cannot return people to a country that are not going to keep them. In other words, a country that are going to move them on somewhere else. So this idea that we can return people and pay a fee, essentially, to other countries, which I believe is being ring-fenced for, say, countries like Italy, people who are disproportionate, or countries that are disproportionately affected by immigration. I mean, that's going to leave us in a very tricky situation. And the only reason we're seeing it as attractive at the moment, I think, is because of the mess that we currently have. I mean, if we were in the situation we were in, say, 10 years ago, where we'd roughly 4,000 or 5,000 migrants coming into the country, you know, each year claiming asylum, well, then it would be it would be a different type of deal. We would absolutely say not. But now we're looking at a situation saying, well, at least it's better than what we have. But what we have is a mess. What we have is a government who are completely out of control when it comes to immigration, a government that are not implementing the law. We have current immigration laws, and as you rightly said, we're handing this over. This is the one thing that most countries, you know, really value, is to control their borders, and none more so than Ireland, because we're surrounded by a sea. So we are in a very good position to control our own borders if we actually put our mind to it. But this looks attractive because of the mess we're in at the moment.
I mean, I can't argue with anything you said there. And as I said, what I was saying a few minutes ago is that it might look good in the short term, but that's only because of how grave the situation is in Ireland at the right now. As you say, it might look different 10 years ago, and as I'd say, it might look different in 10 years' time, because the terms of this pact can be changed. And that's really important for people to understand. When they're saying we're signing up to, you know, for argument's sake, 4,000 migrants a year, this under this version of the pact, which is, you know, a lot less than we will actually be signing up to, but however, that doesn't mean it can't be 14,000 in 2 years' time if the Germans and the French and the Italians come together and say, well, we need to change the terms and reallocate. And we don't have an option to opt out of the pact at that stage once we're into it. So it's an extraordinary risk to be taking with your future border security, is how I would characterise it, and why I wouldn't personally be in favour of it.
And why do you think they're doing it? Why do you think Helen McEntee and Simon Harris are so gung-ho for this piece of legislation, or this agreement, should I say, when realistically they well know that if they want to, they could fix the situation that we currently have? They're under a huge amount of pressure from NGOs not to fix it. I mean, for example, Helen McEntee talked about that particular case of an individual who was being flown home on a chartered flight, and all of a sudden there was an injunction in the High Court and he had to be returned again. And she said she's finding it difficult under the current legislation to remove anybody from the country. Now, where did we ever get to a point where we're not allowed to remove people from our own country? And my argument is, should during COVID-19, we could sign off legislation overnight. So if the law isn't adequate around immigration currently at the moment, why can't we change the law?
Well, we could, but I think your question is to why are they doing this? I think the answer is that Simon Harris, Leo Varadkar before him, Helen McEntee, our current generation of politicians, they're all internationalists. They all believe in working with the international community to form things by consensus and do things together. I mean, I'll give you a move away from the immigration debate altogether for a second. Simon Harris is going around Europe saying he's trying to get other countries to recognize the state of Palestine. There is nothing stopping him from just signing a bit of paper tomorrow and recognizing the existence of Palestine as a state. So why is he wasting all his time going around Europe talking about how Ireland will do it when other countries do it, or in partnership with other countries? It's because he firmly believes that, you know, these things can only be done on an international, multinational basis. So that is why the European Migration Pact is attractive to them. It protects them on their left flank, Niall, because if, for example, in the short term it means taking fewer migrants, they can say, well, look, this is an approach we agreed with our European partners. It's not bowing to the far right. It's not doing any of that sort of stuff. So it protects them on their left political flank. That's one element of it. It gives them the excuse to turn around to the NGOs if it means that we're taking 3,000 fewer migrants next year and say, well, it's not our fault. You know, the bad Europeans made us do it. And it's also attractive for another reason, which is that exact same point in the future, which is Irish politicians love nothing more than blaming the European Union for things that's happening in the country. So if in 10 years' time we've got a massive amount of immigration into the country, they will say, just as they go on television now and say, well, these are our international legal and moral obligations, they will then go on and say, well, look, we have to comply with the terms of the European Migration Pact.
We've a problem there that we have European MEPs who all raise their hand like good boys and girls to everything that Europe suggests to them. And now I think that's going to change probably in the next year. There's going to be a huge shift in the European Union when MEPs are elected in June this year, because certainly we're seeing a move towards the centre and the right. So, but all of those particular MEPs that we currently have at the moment, who we haven't seen for 4.5 years, and now they're suddenly back cutting ribbons to open supermarkets to get your vote again, you know, every single one of them, bar two, I think, put their hand up, and one that was absent put their hand up for this and says this is a great idea. So they're a bunch of lefties.
Yes, well that is true, but hopefully we get some better MEPs, or at least a better variety of MEPs in these European elections. That remains to be seen. Hopefully we will. However, I think it's very important also to remember that, and think about this from the point of view of our politicians, because our politicians, to some extent, they don't care what you, Niall, and what I think about this, and they don't really care about your listeners, because your listeners are, and I'm not trying to flatter them, sort of above average politically informed people aware of what's going on in the country. So when they pull the stunt of saying later on, oh, it's the European Migration Pact, we have to comply with it, they're banking that the vast majority of people in the country will forget that this debate ever took place. That it would be a simple matter of, oh, well, if we have to do it and the European Union says we have to do it, and look, we can't leave the European Union, so therefore, you know, it's a good excuse. And I think this happens in a whole range of policy areas. It's happening, for example, if people aren't aware of the court case at the European Court of Justice, which isn't actually a European Union body but is part of the Council of Europe, which we're also signed up, ruled last week on climate change, for example, basically that governments are legally obliged to enact a load of policies that the Greens favour, even if the voters object. And of course, the Irish government signed up to advocate in favour of that case, joined the plaintiffs, because then they can at a later stage say, well, hands up, we've no choice to do this. It's all about removing political accountability from Ireland and basically saying, well, we're only doing what the public signed up to, we're only enacting our obligations, and there's no real choice but to enact policies left, right and centre. That is a consistent trend in Irish politics and has been for many years now, that they're eager to give away sovereignty, because when they give away sovereignty, they no longer have to make the tough decisions themselves. And that is something that it's broader than just immigration, but you see it all of the time. These people are actively eager to give away sovereignty because it's actually in their political interest to do so, because if they can blame somebody else, then that makes their political lives a little bit easier.
In relation to some of the details, okay, they're talking about reception centres close to Dublin Airport, a 7-day turnaround on processing, fingerprinting and making sure people don't have criminal records. That includes children and adults. All this stuff, which we should be doing at the moment, by the way, but all of this stuff. Do you trust that in 2 years' time, because it will take 2 years, although we are going to be signing this pact within the next three or four days, do you think that in the next 2 years they will implement all that? Do you trust the government, or indeed whatever the future government, the next government, which could be Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin coalition, we don't know, but do you trust the government to actually implement that, or will they do exactly as they're doing at the moment, which is not doing it at all?
I think people have every reason to be sceptical that the government is capable of delivering that sort of stuff, because, as you say, they haven't delivered people. There is no legal impediment to us having a 7-day turnaround. There's no legal impediment to us having reception centres, detention centres, however you want to phrase them, for people coming into the country. There is no legal requirement on us to do what we do, which is effectively the people come down to the migration office in Dublin, often from Belfast, say we're here to claim asylum, and they're essentially given papers, the freedom to go, and possibly the keys to a house somewhere or an apartment, as we saw in one incident in County Kildare earlier on in the year. There's no obligation on us to do any of that stuff. It's all being done on an ad hoc basis. So the idea that the government is actually going to, just because they've signed up to the European Migration Pact, suddenly start behaving as some people might expect them to do, is, I think, a little bit far-fetched. And I think it's a very reasonable question to ask them, why haven't you been doing it now? And an even better question to ask them is, what legal impediment was in place for you to do this up until now? I mean, the most dishonest thing about this, and politicians are often dishonest, is that they essentially tie things that they could be doing already to we can do this only if we sign up to X or only if we pass X law. That's not true. You could be building all these things you're talking about building that could have been built 3-4 years ago. Mm-hmm. There's no impediment in Irish law to doing it. And the funny thing is, they will simultaneously make two different arguments at you and hope you don't notice. On the one hand, they'll say, oh, well, the European Migration Pact will mean that we have to open all these new centres and toughen up our border controls and all the rest of it. And at the same time, they'll say, it doesn't really change our laws at all. So which is it? You know, I mean, they make these contradictory claims in order to try and befuddle people.
Okay.
And the truth is, mm-hmm. Sorry, go ahead, Matt.
No. The truth is, go on, continue.
The truth is, like, this pact is not necessary for us if we want to control immigration. It's not a necessary precondition. And trying to sell it as such is deeply dishonest. But what it is, and this is the really important thing for people to understand, is it is probably the largest single transfer of sovereignty away from Dublin and to Brussels that we've ever had, in that it essentially controls. We, as an Irish state, will no longer be able to say, this is the number of people we're accepting into our country this year. That decision will effectively be made by a committee in Brussels who can vary it year to year over the head of our objections. That is an unprecedented thing to have happened in the history of the Irish
and just,
state.
Just before
and hardly anyone's focusing on that.
And just before you go, the timeline on this, as we know, that's already been voted for by EU MEPs. It's now with the government. It has been debated in the Oireachtas. Well, for half a day is all they're going to give the debate in the Oireachtas. I know Senator MacDool was almost on the verge of having a breakdown the other day when he was trying to explain this to Jerry Buttermer. What's next now? I know Carol Nolan is demanding a longer debate on this because she believes it's so important, as is Matty McGrath and Padraig Tobin and many others. So what is the timeline on it now, and how long do people have, or do we have, to put in some sort of objection to get a no vote on this?
Well, in terms of the timeline, it has to come back from committee by, I think, the 5th of May. And I think the hearing that you're referring to, which the senator was referring to, which is the committee hearing, which is half a day, I think is going to be on the 25th of April, which is, I think, this day next week. It's next Thursday, I think. But once that's happened, there does not need to be a debate, effectively. I mean, there can be a debate, but once the government has the votes, if this is government policy, they will vote it through, and that will probably happen sometime in early May, which will go to what's known as fourth stage and then final stage, where effectively it comes back from committee. There's a committee report saying, and the committee report will say, because the government controls the process here, it will say, this is a great idea, and it's government policy, and then there might be an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, maybe granted to the Dáil or the Shannons to debate it, and then there'll be a vote. So unless government policy changes, i.e. unless the TDs, senators and ministers who represent Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Greens are convinced by weight of public argument that this is a bad idea rather than a good idea, this will be in place by the middle of May, early June, before the European elections. And bear in mind, the European elections are kind of a cut-off date here because then there's a new European Parliament.
Yeah.
All the rest of it. So they're very eager to get this in place. I think, as indeed are a lot of European countries, before EU citizens go to the polls, because they want to be able to sell it as something good that this European Parliament has done for the people.
Well, listen, it's been wonderful talking, John. And don't forget, by the way, if people want to go to Grip Media, there's a very interesting story there in relation to last month's referendum, by the way, that documents that had been provided under Freedom of Information to Grip Media, which almost suggest that the government knew, or certainly the Cabinet may have been aware, because the Attorney General was, in relation to the impact changing the word family or durable relationship or meaningless relationship, as I would have called it, would have had on immigration. Have a good read of that. And we also did an interview yesterday with Gary Kavanagh, which is also on the Grip Media Twitter account and our own Twitter account as well, if you want to have a look at there. Listen, John, thank you very much indeed, and I appreciate you coming on and talking to us.
Thanks, Niall. Have a great day.
Now, let me go to Albert. Albert, hi, how are you? Let me get you on here. Sorry, Albert, go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. Niall, look, this document or this bill in itself is so dense, it's so difficult to understand. I don't even think the politicians here understand exactly what's in it. And when you've got the far left and the far right both telling people to vote no, or to vote no to this, I mean, there's something fishy going on here. But you're right. They're like, this will get rid of our sovereignty. We won't be able to do anything anymore. It will be done by Brussels. But on the other hand, at the end of the day, it's the courts who seem to be deciding our immigration policy. Because no matter how hard we try to get rid of people, the courts seem to keep them.
But that's not the answer. That's like us throwing in the towel and saying, listen, we're incapable of looking after our own borders. So listen, lads, will you look after them for us? That's not really the way we should.
But
we shouldn't be incapable, Albert. We have a Minister for Justice. We have a Taoiseach. We have a government. We have Garda Síochána. We have a courts. You know, we should be capable of implementing immigration law. We have a sea around this country. It's easier for us to do it than, say, France or Spain.
We've politicians who might as well be puppets because they do nothing. They certainly do nothing to keep any sovereignty within this country or keep our borders safe. We've got guards who are not doing their job, and whether it's their fault or someone else's fault.
I want to know that. I want to know why they're not doing their jobs. Who told the Garda Síochána not to implement the law? Because that's the law. When somebody comes into Ireland and they've no passport, they've no documentation, they've no nothing, that's illegal under Irish law.
Okay, yes, but that has to be coming then from the Immigration Department. So the Department of Immigration, it's not exactly what it is, but they're saying, you know, when they come here and they say, oh, we're here for protection, they just have to let them in. They are not turning them back, and there's no policy on turning them back, although it's illegal to do it. They're not turning them back. They need to be, the guards need to be standing at the door of the airplane, and everyone shows the passport as they're getting off. And if they don't show it, they get back on the aeroplane. Like, that's what should be happening. And the people who are turning up here at the International Protection Office in Dublin, who are coming down from Belfast, they should be turned around as well. But they're not, because nobody is doing their job. Nobody in the government.
I mean, look at Mount Street. Look, I mean, and Hardwick, yeah. All around the whole area. I have never seen anything like it. We actually put San Francisco to shame at this stage. It was just one little lane full of tents. Now it's like three streets full of tents. I mean, if you go back 7 or 8 years ago, when we had a bit of a problem here, that, you know, the housing crisis was at its peak, and we'd Irish people living along the canal. Do you remember that in tents along the canals? And the Garda Síochána and the county council were very quick to go out and remove all the tents, because they said, you can't be doing that. You can't be sleeping out in the open in a tent. This is Ireland. That's not what we do in this country. But we're allowing this to happen. It's like tent city up around Mount Street. I know somebody who bought an apartment up there, and she's a lefty, by the way, and she's horrified. She doesn't feel safe. She can't go out. She said the smell of shit is terrible because there's no toilets or no nothing. They're just peeing on the street and pooing on the street, and that's not their fault, I suppose. But she said it's disgraceful.
No, they can't be seen to be doing this. This is the problem, is that every time you try, I mean, it's the same, our conversation here, we would be classed as right-wing and fascist.
Oh, yeah,
and
of course.
If the guards go and try and move these people on, that's exactly what they'll be classed as. Fascist police force coming to do this to poor immigrants. Like, you can't win either way. But they have to be stopped at the borders. They have to be stopped before they get in here. Once they get in here, it's more difficult to get rid of them. So, but the idea that we're going to surrender sovereignty to Brussels is crazy. I mean, we will have no control over how many come into this country. And the idea that we're going to be paying 20,000 to 25,000 for every person we don't take, Jesus Christ.
The biggest problem in that is, if they say 30,000 and we say, well, actually, no, we only want to take 25, so we'll pay you for the other 5,000, right?
Yeah.
And then that other 5,000, for example, are coming from the United Kingdom, or they're coming from Birmingham or Liverpool or wherever it is, and they're coming in through Belfast. We can't send them back anyway. Well, it doesn't matter where they're coming from. We must send them back to a country that we know are not going to remove them again. So in other words, if we send them, there's already been the High Court case. If we send them to the UK, they will claim it's not a safe country because they might be sent to Rwanda. If we send them to Germany, for example, they'll say it's not a safe country because they might send us somewhere else. So we must send them to a country where they know they're going to stay and be looked after. In other words, they become, as soon as they step onto our soil, they become our responsibility. And
I know.
We can't deal with that.
But no, the problem is, and I've said this already, is it's the courts who are deciding our immigration policy, because they will simply, and it doesn't matter what laws are there. I mean, we have enough laws to get rid of all these people. But every time we go to do that, they go to the courts and something else happens. And the courts, I tell you this, the judges in this country need to be strung up, because what they're, we have legislation, you know, to keep our borders safe, to keep our people safe, and they are dismantling it one by one.
But Helen McEntee is saying we don't have the laws to remove people. And I find this just so disingenuous, because during COVID-19, we didn't have the laws to stop people getting into a restaurant who hadn't got a vaccine. We didn't have the laws to stop people going around not wearing masks. Well, we brought the laws in like that overnight to make sure people did it. So if we don't have the laws at the moment, bring in the laws, change the laws. They can do these things when they want to, when there's a passion to do it, but they just don't seem to want to do it. They seem to want to continue down this reckless path of having people, you know, poor unfortunates sleeping in tents all over the city. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and you've got NGOs who are being funded by the government, who are taking the government to court, who are facilitating all the immigrants that they can.
And are lying to us as well, by the way. And they're lying. And they're lying. They're misinforming on documentaries on television as well by suggesting that people are checked for a criminal background when they're not. So they're actually misinforming us as well. Stay there for a second. Let me go to Teresa. Teresa, hi. How are you?
Hi, Niall. This is my first time on your podcast, so I'm not sure what the process is.
Oh, well, but I guess you just talk away. You just talk away, Teresa.
Okay. Well, basically, what I, like many other people in the country, in Ireland, I mean living in the country, not in Dunleary or in Dublin, we feel right now, I believe, I do personally, of course, that the wool is being pulled over our eyes once again. I mean, they did this in the referendum. They did it with the hate speech bill. And now this is being rushed through once again. Mr. McDowell, or Senator McDowell, has explained yesterday that Helen McEntee will come to the Senate next week, and on Tuesday, I believe, and speak for approximately an hour. This will be rushed through once again. And I'm sorry, we don't know the details of this EU pact. Irish people have not been given the detail of this. They need to be given the details. And in order to understand the detail of it, I'm sure it would at least take 6 months. The people behind this EU-European pact, I mean, obviously it isn't something that has been proposed by Helen McEntee. It's probably been proposed by Italy or France that are just, I mean, Italy is inundated. So what's going to happen in 6 months? Or is Italy going to transfer some of the people they have there to Ireland and other countries? That would be my question. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people that are legal experts, and they are saying that we have an opt-out. We have an opt-out. We actually have a general opt-out of the immigration deal in Europe from some years ago, from 2001 or whenever, and particularly with this something called the Amsterdam Treaty.
That's right.
I would like to know if we do have that opt-out, and why are
better minds than me I've spoken to on the air, and I've said on numerous occasions over the last couple of years when we've talked about this, that we do have an option to opt out.
Yes, that's how I understand it also. But the Irish people are not being told the truth. We were not told the truth, obviously, from the scandal that has erupted today with what has been, you know, the evidence that has come out of things that they knew before this referendum. Mm-hmm. And they went out and, with the help of the mainstream media, lied to the electorate. So we cannot trust them with this EU immigration pact. And I am certainly against it. And we should actually do everything in our power to opt out. Because somebody, I just heard on your show a few moments ago, a gentleman, that, and I agree with most of what he has said, in fact, but he did say that, I quote, he said, in 10 years' time, if Ireland has a huge amount of immigration, Ireland already has a huge amount of immigration. We have the highest per capita immigration in the OECD. Mm-hmm. And the OECD declared this 10 years ago.
See, we're in a very difficult situation because this pact is based on a country's GDP. And as you know, because we have so many multinational companies, which could leave in the morning, by the way, we have an inflated GDP. It's not as good as, it looks good on paper, but it's not actually as good as it is. So from that point of view, at the moment, our quota is 30,000 immigrants per year. That's at the moment. Yes. But that could increase. That could go down or it could increase. We will have no control over that figure. We will be told by the European Union, this is the figure you must take.
Okay, and I would like to understand the implication, the constitutional implications of this, because there are people like Senator McDowell and Ronan Mullen and other people that are experts and other senators, in fact, not people in the Dáil, maybe perhaps Father Tobin that has spoken out, but and Carl Nolan. And
I did actually contact Michael McDowell and Pater because they'd been on the show quite a number of times, but unfortunately they weren't available for me today.
Yes. Oh, that's a shame. But I mean, the problem that Ireland has, the biggest problem, I guess, is that we cannot trust our media. Our media right now are silent, and yet they were very vocal in the referendum. They told everybody. They told us that the polling was 56% yes. In fact, the only area was that had 56% yes result in the referendum was that tiny enclave, Dunleary.
Yeah.
And that is actually is the same area in Ireland that has been deciding everything for the Irish people, and that has to stop.
Mm-hmm.
But what I would like to say is another implication of this opt-in is that in fact we will not be able to send people back to the UK. I read something about that on Twitter this morning, and that really shocked me, because a lot of the people that are coming here, because of the strict visa regulations and so forth that the EU or the UK are bringing in, we will not be able to send them back to the UK.
There's a lot. I mentioned this already earlier on. There's a lot of limitations. We can't send them back to the UK because they'll claim it's not a safe country because they can be returned to Rwanda. And we're not allowed to send them to any other EU country who we believe won't keep them. So essentially what will happen is if somebody comes here illegally, no matter who they happen to be or what their background happens to be, and they don't have papers, documentation, whatever it is, we cannot remove them from the state unless we remove them to a country we believe will keep them. In other words, they become our personal responsibility.
Yes, and that has already happened. And let's be honest here. We had 3.8 million of a population in 2001. This was after the large number of people that came from Eastern Europe and the large number of people that came from North Africa and other countries. So in 2001, we were already at 3.8 million people. We have gone from 3.8 in 2001 to what is it now?
5.1, I think it is now. It could have gone up a bit more in the last year and a half with Ukrainians as well.
I think it's actually the latest figure is much higher. I mean, this is 1.6 million people more. And yes, the number of hospital beds has not increased. We have 300. I mean, I think maybe we need to stand back and talk more about the politicians and what they're not doing, what they're trying to sneak in and what they are not doing. And I mean, one of the things that really upsets me and a lot of people that I speak to where I live here is that the politicians come out and they say that they have a moral and legal obligation to take unknown people from all kinds, all parts of the world. They have a moral, Micheál Martin says it, uses it frequently. So does many of the other people. Sinn Féin as well use this, our moral and legal obligation. They have a moral and legal obligation to Irish people. I am tired when I go out once a week to do my shopping, and I shop like a lot of other people in Lidl, in Aldi and Tesco and all these places. I don't shop in the expensive stores. But when I go out to shop, I am looking at Irish pensioners with two and three basic items in their basket. They leave the shop and they go home to a cold house. We have children. We have apparently 250,000 young people. I won't say young, 30s, 40s, 20s, that are living with their parents, maybe in a cold room. And they will never be able to have a family. Our politicians have a moral and legal obligation to them. They have a moral and legal obligation to the 300 children that are waiting for scoliosis treatment. That is their moral and legal obligation. And
the 4,000 children who are in temporary accommodation currently at the moment with the other 12,000 adults. Yes.
Of Of course.
Teresa, do me a favour. I have to say, you're a wonderful speaker, and you said quite a lot there, and I think everybody would agree with nearly every word that came out of your mouth.
Sorry for taking up.
No, you're not taking up any time. I'd like you to stay with me for a second, because I want to go to, I have a lot of people want to come on, but I want you to stay there as well. Jason, hi, how are you? Jason, are you there?
How are you getting on?
Jason, does it concern you? Look, it's been sold to us as an attractive package, which is better than what we have, but what we have is a mess.
Niall, do you honest to God think they care any more about us? As for that lady is so well spoken, but my God, she sounds so far right to be banging down her door. And that's what we're being portrayed as. If we stand up and put our head above the parapet and say, please, take stock of what's happening to our country. You're far right, down with that sort of thing. Niall, the worrying thing for me is the way our Garda Síochána Conn have turned against us. Mm-hmm. They're not the Lugs Brannigans that we all remember. You know, they've turned against the Irish people. If you've seen what's went on up in Newtown, Mount Kennedy,
I've seen the videos.
Mullingar. Yesterday morning when we were all in work, another 50 international protection people, let's just say, all men, only meant to be families, were put into our village on top of what we've already taken. And we were basically told, tough.
I'm all for supporting and helping people who come from a war, come from a country where their lives are in danger. Absolutely. And we do have, as Teresa said, a moral obligation, a humanitarian obligation to some people. But what we're seeing is, and by the Minister of Justice's own admission, the vast majority who are coming here are not in that situation. They're economic migrants.
Niall, they're coming from countries like Vietnam, Georgia, Albania, all them. They're not at war. I'm sorry, they might be horrible places to live. But if we keep taking this amount in...
Albania is a holiday destination at the moment, as is Georgia. Yeah.
But yeah, exactly. But if we keep taking all of this, and I mean, most of them could be decent people. We just don't know. If they're decent, why are they getting rid of the papers? Why are we not out at the airport demanding that these airlines take these people back if there's no papers? And as for the housing thing, Niall, they're never going to fix the housing crisis. It's not within their best interest. If they build enough houses to feed the population, guess what? All the money we have tied up in years, our assets in years, our houses to pay years of pension drops. Because if there's 20 houses there and there's only 15 people looking for them, guess what? The price drops.
Well, how can you fix a housing crisis when you're bringing in people or allowing people, that many people, to come into a country faster than you can actually build houses for them, when you currently already have about 80,000 people on a housing list waiting for housing for the last 10 or 20 years, or social housing or affordable housing or whatever it happens to be? And then you've got people in the private sector also looking for developments to be built as well that they can purchase. How can you build that many houses when you're increasing the population, and we will continue to increase by, say, 30,000 people a year? You just couldn't do it that quick. We don't have enough people to build the houses. And I'm really sorry, I have so many people to get to. Jason, I don't mean to cut you short too badly, but please save me there, Teresa, as well. I want to go to Manus. Manus, hi, how are you?
Hello, how are you?
Good, you've been listening to Teresa. She's a rocket sense, I have to say. She said everything I wanted to say, but go on.
Well, I might have missed some of the contributions, but I think, I suppose, what I'm really talking about is, I suppose, what John McGurk was saying. I only caught the end of what he was saying, but that basically the government wants this to be a fait accompli.
Yeah.
And there's a way around it. And you know the way some people get married and there was a mistake and the court will find, they'll give an annulment.
Yes.
And they say it would never happened. So I would say, well, nobody voting for this went to the people and put in their literature, if you vote for me, I will pass this whatever act.
Mm.
Okay.
Well, will they do? Because the current government, until there's a general election, have a mandate from the people. So you wouldn't have a legal argument.
They have a mandate from the people to enact what they promised to do.
But they don't promise everything. When there's an election, for example, they could equally argue that the EU Migration Pact or Asylum Migration Pact wasn't developed or wasn't around at the last election, so they wouldn't have been able to promise that. There's a lot of things.
Then why do they have an opt-out?
But we don't have an opt-out. There is no opt-out. If we opt in, that's it. We're there for good.
But that's why a notification comes into it. So what I want to mention is something that's never been done.
Okay.
But just because it hasn't been done doesn't mean it can't be done.
It's kind of like that old thing, should we be able to sue a politician if they lie to us? You know, I don't know. Should you?
No, what I'm going to talk about here is something that it can only happen if there's buy-in, if it's popular. And that is using Article 6 of the Constitution to nullify this decision or any other decision that didn't have a mandate. Now, Article 6 says the people are the highest judicial, legislative and government authority in the land. Now, you can't just have mob rule say, oh, the people say this, the people say that, I want this. It has to be, it goes on to say it can only be done through an organ of the state. So the European elections and the local elections are organised through an organ of the state. So if, now, Bertie did this when he reran the Nice Treaty. He said Article 6 allows the people to change their, to decide if they want to change their minds so we can rerun the Nice referendum.
Yeah, I just read that in case people are interested. All powers of the government, legislative, executive and judicial, derive under God from the people whose right it is to designate the rulers of the state and in a final appeal to decide all questions of national policy according to the requirements of the common good. These powers of government are exercisable only by or on the authority of the organs of the state established by a constitution. But that to me, what Article 6 says to me is that you've given the government a mandate. And as long as they deem it to be within the common good, which they will, but then they're done, aren't they? That's okay with them then.
That would be obviously what they would argue.
Yeah.
I argue that given that Bertie got away with rerunning Nice and used the argument that I'm making, that people who don't agree with what the government wants to do can use the same argument. And that is by making an election promise or making a declaration at election time, you can use the number of people who voted for you to argue you have the authority or that the authority is there.
Okay, well, it's an interesting point, Manus. Thank you for raising that. Teresa, by the way, have you contacted some of your local politicians in relation to either this or, I'm not too sure what part of Galway you live in. I know you live in Galway. But
yes.
Have you contacted them?
Well, actually, I speak to people all the time. So, I haven't spoken to my local politician here because I don't really have any respect for him, I guess.
Okay, fair enough. I know that feeling. Yeah. And your local MEPs, by the way, they were the ones who put their little hands up in the air and said yes to this going back 3 weeks ago.
Yes, I mean...
You won't be voting for them again.
No, and then I think, I did see something yesterday or today that somebody had put out in a post and said that Helen McEntee was costing Fine Gael 10 seats at the moment. I think Helen McEntee, before she's finished, will have cost almost every seat for Fine Gael. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, by the way.
No.
But my fear and apprehension is that there isn't anybody to replace this incompetence. Where is the competence in Ireland? You know, do we have to bring people back from abroad that, you know, that know something and can do something and question something and do the right thing for Irish citizens? I bring it back again to the moral and legal obligation that politicians have to the Irish people. And that doesn't mean that you have to be heartless to everybody else. But what I find is that people like me that speak up, very rarely people disagree with me, by the way, when I do speak or when I meet people out.
You do know you'd be called right-wing by the government. You do know that.
Yeah, well, I've already been called.
Well, so have I, by the way. So have I. But I always say, well, if I'm far right, you're far wrong.
Yes. No, I mean, I'm not afraid of that. And I think, you know, I didn't live all my working life in Ireland. Most of my working life I lived abroad. But what I have seen since I came back to Ireland is absolutely shocking. It's shocking. And I think the disrespect that is being shown to Irish people is really heart-rending for me to look at. And I think these virtue-signaling left-wing people or neoliberals or whatever they're called these days, that they don't see the misery and depression and lack of money and lack of wherewithal that's right in front of them. And it's amongst Irish people. It's amongst Irish pensioners. It's amongst young people. And it's heartbreaking to see this in a country that you mentioned earlier has taken in, I think, roughly, it has had a budget surplus, I don't know, over the last 10 years, but maybe could it have been 20 billion a year?
Could have been, yeah.
Ireland has a higher tax intake per capita than Germany, go to Germany and see how the Germans live. Macron came out recently and he said that France could not look after the misery of the world and that they cannot take on the misery of the world.
But yeah, well, that's why France capped the numbers when it came to even Ukrainians.
Yes, yes. And they don't let people in that have no documents, by the way.
No.
But what I'm saying about that is that France actually, he said that with the knowledge that they have the best healthcare system in the world, probably in the world, but definitely in Europe. They have the best pension system and the lowest pension age in Europe. The French people are well looked after.
And they have cheap energy rates as well because they operate on nuclear power.
Exactly. One of the cheapest energy rates. Mm. An Irish person or an Irish young person is faced with the highest energy costs. Many of them with huge, the rental costs are just out of this world.
Unaffordable.
And you have, you know, they're now going to come out and try to bribe everybody before this general election.
Okay, do me a favor, Teresa, stay there, because I want you to stay with me. John, hi, how are you, John? Sorry for keeping you so long, John. I do apologize.
No, you're grand. I would say that I hope Teresa will become a regular contributor to this podcast because she's absolutely excellent.
Mm. She has a lot to say, and I agree with 99.9% of everything she says. Yeah.
No, what's happening, you see, once upon a time we did a thing called the European Economic Community.
Yeah.
Now, community spells like you mean that you look after the community, local community, the country as a community, Europe as a community. But no, that was got rid of the community part of it, and it's now the European Union. But a union of what? A union of dictators. We might, I don't know what people are going to the polls are here next year, because we might have no government here. We have no control over our own country. And another thing, the Gardaí one mentioned earlier on there, Drew Harris is the commissioner. He's in charge of every single part of the police in this country and the law and order, right? He works for the people. He doesn't work for the government, right? He works for the people. So he should be coming out on his own and saying, this is crazy stuff. I mean, people coming in here, there's no way I could get into the United States of America without any documentation, or Canada.
But you look at the morale within the Garda Síochána. The AGM is on next week, and they haven't even invited Drew Harris to it. And because they haven't invited Drew Harris, the Garda AGM, which is on next week, the Minister for Justice said she won't be attending it. That's the mess we have within our Garda force.
You see, the Irish people are fucking and hurting bad now. When they see what's happening here now, I have a friend and his wife got a stroke last year, right? And she wasn't due to finish work in Linda this year. And he applied for an emergency medical card. And he's still waiting for it now. And that's nearly 12 months. That's despicable.
Okay, just back on point, if we get back to the EU Migration Pact, it's been sold as something attractive because certainly from the outset it looks better than what we have, but what we have is reckless.
Well, the thing is, if you refuse, then if there's an allocation given to Ireland, you must take an X amount, right? And we don't. It's 25,000 per person, then, right?
Per year.
And if we say 50,000 people are refused, that's over 1.2 billion. We're going to have to pay out. How many social houses will we build for that?
I don't think it works quite that way. Basically, the allocation would be, say, let's 30,000, let's just say, in the first year or whatever it happens to be. Mm-hmm. If we decide we only want 25,000, we pay for the 5,000. So it's not a case, as far as I'm aware, it's not a case of you must take 30,000 and if 70,000 arrive, you have to give us, pay us for the 40,000 you send back. I'm not actually 100% sure on that. I must check that out, actually.
We don't know. We've been sold a pup here. We're walking around in the dark with no light in the house. I mean, we don't know what. Our sovereignty, like you mean, everything, our republicanism has been sold down to Swanee. And only for you and John McGuck, right? And for Paddy Tobin and for Ronan Mullen, right? And for Karen Nolan and people like that. We've been the shit completely, like, because just steamrolling over. What's going on? There's only one word to sum up what's happening in this country now. It's pure traitorism.
Yeah.
Pure traitorism.
Yeah, I'm not going to deny that. It does seem that way, certainly. Well, when you're in a situation where you have a government who are not listening to the people, and we've seen that with the hate speech bill, and we've seen that with other things as well, and we'll probably see it later this year as well with the WHO treaty. So we're going to see it with a lot of things. We see a government that are well aware of the mood of the nation. Just like when I was a DJ many, many years ago in the nightclub, you know, the good DJs were the ones that could look at the dance floor and know what songs to play. You could read the room. I'm well aware that the government can read the room. They know how the people feel. But as somebody mentioned earlier on, I think it was John McGurk actually said it, you know, Therese is an educated person. You're educated in politics, John, as well. I think I'm reasonably well educated when it comes to politics. I know what's going on. Yeah. But as I was saying, when I was walking around there at Christmas down Grafton Street and I'm looking around me, the average person doesn't really know what's going on. And they'll be sold this as something good. So they're not really interested too much in politics. The only time they're interested in politics is, you know, 3 days coming up to an election.
That's the problem, you see, that because I meet people all the time there and they're not registered. And I tell them, for God's sake, would you go away and get registered? Mm. Because there's people in the world have no vote and they'd love to have a vote. And when I hear people saying that, it drives me around the bend, I tell you straight.
Yeah, no, it drives me around the bend too, because we have a personal responsibility as citizens of a country to be educated. And to, well, when I say to be educated, to have at least an understanding of what's going on in our own country. Claire, hi, how are you? Thank you, John.
Hi.
Sorry, Claire, are you there? Can you hear me?
Sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Go ahead, Claire.
Hi, yeah, sorry, I'm from North Kildare. Yeah, obviously very concerned citizen, and I've been emailing all of my local TDs for the last couple of weeks, and nobody responds to me, and I just want to know why we voted them in. These are civil servants that work for us, and they're not giving us any feedback. And Catherine Murphy went on the news and lied about saying that she had given us feedback on who was coming into our communities. Well, we're not getting any response whatsoever.
Yeah.
We're also paying for civil servants, the Gardaí, to protect us, and they're not protecting us. I want answers, and I'm very, very, very disgusted at our government.
So your main concern is the lack of communication. In other words, it's not being,
yeah,
things not being communicated.
Nothing at all. No response at all. Even when we show up at like where they sit, they decide to ring in sick if there's a few of us. So they know we're coming, and they won't answer any of us.
And you feel kind of voiceless. And this is what I kind of said on Twitter the other day when I was talking
like
about the people in Coolock.
Anything at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really upset. Sorry, I can't stay long, but it was nice to talk to you today.
You
take
too.
Care.
Thanks, Claire. Bye. See you. Bye, bye, bye. That is the kind of case, isn't it, Teresa, that people kind of feel voiceless, don't they?
I think they do. But, it, you know, to go back to, you know, what the other gentleman said earlier, I think he's from Cork.
John.
From his accent.
Yeah.
You know, that we are all just like groping in the dark. I think it's actually our politicians that are groping in the dark and chancing their arm. And actually, I think they learned a lesson from the referendum.
Did they really learn a lesson from them? You would have thought would with a record defeat like that. You'd imagine they would have.
Well, actually, I understand what you're saying, but I think actually they did, because they seem scared. And if you look at some of the name calling that has come up again, you know, that they're calling people all these names, racist, fascist, far right, you know, all of these horrible things. I mean, to live in a country where your fellow citizens call you that because you see that there is suffering right in front of their noses. They virtue signal and say that they, you know, they're full of humanity, but they actually don't see the suffering right in front of them. In, you know, pensioners and
children,
I mentioned before. But to get back to really what your podcast is about today, I think I would like, but we have to think about what we should like to see happen in the next week. And I would like to see what I would like to see happen is the people that have the capability and have the resources, that they would get involved and find out exactly what we can do to stop.
Well, look, we have the capability, right? Because if you look at the last referendum, as you know, all government parties, everybody was, the NGOs, all pushing for a yes, even the National Women's Council, who are completely out of touch with women of Ireland, all pushing for a yes vote. And yet, the mainstream media, if you want to say, RTE, you know, they dedicated a lot more time to a yes vote. They certainly gave a lot more positive spin to a yes vote than they did to a no vote. And that's without a shadow of a doubt. And if it wasn't for, you know, the likes of, say, Grip Media, and I give myself a little bit of credit as well, because we had Michael McDougall on, we had Ronan on, we had them all on, you know, Sharon Keoghan, everybody on, on a regular basis during that referendum, I think that would have been a yes vote. So because these individuals, the likes of Michael McDougall, who's quite passionate about it, and Ronan Mullen and Senator Keoghan and the rest of them, they all really pushed hard. They were equally as passionate on the no side. And I think without that type of media, and without those individuals, you are right, we're kind of doomed. But I think they could do that. I think they can do that again now. I mean, you've got more of them. You've got Carol Nolan, Matty McGrath now involved as well. And the ones that I mentioned already, they're all involved in this as well. So I think we can equally do the same thing that we did last month.
Yes, and I know Sharon because I helped her also with putting up
I know Sharon very well. She's a lovely person. Yeah.
Well, I don't know her personally, but I was in touch with her because we assisted her here in Galway to put up posters for the no vote.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is right now the media is totally silent, from what I can see, regarding this EU pact. So they're silent because they're being told to, I guess. I you know, that's what I assume. So we need people to become vocal now because in the next week, this will be pushed through if it's not stopped.
Stay there for a second. Nuala, hi, Nuala. How are you? Nuala. Oh, I think Nuala's gone. Nuala, are you there? Okay, let me go to Lorenzo. Lorenzo, hi.
Hi, Niall. How are you?
I'm good, Lorenzo. Lorenzo, the EU migration package, well, actually, your home country is a country that's been affected pretty badly by immigration. It's, at the moment, quite a lot of individuals in Italy that shouldn't be probably there. And Italy, obviously, is feeling the brunt of it.
Well, I think that the main reason why you have this EU new law is because Italian politicians pushed
Yes.
European countries to take the part of the burden in this. So probably it's our fault if we have to. If you're
so we can blame you, Lorenzo. Is that what you're telling me? Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So our problem in Italy is that we are the geographically we are the closest country to North Africa, and that's where all the migrants are coming from. Mainly North African and African countries. The problem is at the moment in Italy, if you say or talk about protect the borders, you are pointed as a fascist that doesn't want to help poor people escaping from their countries.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the problem is that the countries that they are escaping from, of course, they have wars.
Some do. Some have wars. Some don't.
Some have wars. Some don't. The problem with the economical situation in those countries is because France is keeping doing colonialism instead of giving those countries freedom. And the other part that is the main problem is
Your phone is breaking up a bit, Lorenzo, but I think you're going to get to corruption is probably the other main part in a lot of those countries. And we as Europeans, you know, provide a lot of money and aid and finances, but that's probably not good enough to many of these countries. But unfortunately, it goes down a black hole.
It goes down to the dictators that are controlling,
yes.
Not obviously people are living there. But the main problem that we have in Italy is that the Navy is going to pick them up. So what is happening at the moment about migrants through the Mediterranean is that they pay thousands of dollars to get on the coast, and then they are basically they put them, the smugglers, the human smugglers are putting those people on teeny tiny boats that are known to be not safe. They bring them into international waters, they leave them there, or even they damage the boat, so the boat starts sinking, and then they phone the Italian Navy saying, there is a boat there, it's sinking, go ahead.
Yeah, they need to be rescued, and they're brought back to Italy, yeah.
Exactly, so this is what is happening.
So, well, the same thing is happening across the English Channel as well. I mean, once they can get halfway across, yeah. You know, the English will happily, or the British people will happily take them into England. Well, not happily, but they're taking them in. Okay, but getting back to the situation that we're at, and many of those people deserve our sympathy and our support. Many don't, because many are just economic migrants taking a chance. Mind you, that is human trafficking, which is illegal, by the way, and that also should be dealt with. But
exactly.
In relation to what we're doing currently at the moment, the way we're going to deal with it now is that Europe take control of our laws when it comes to immigration. Is that acceptable in any man's terms?
Well, that's the same thing in Italy, where Europe is saying we should or we have or do or don't have to do. So I think that the main problem is that they have to be helped. I'm not saying that they don't have to be helped, but they should be helped before they leaving their homes.
Yes, absolutely.
Not here. turned off in Italy.
Well, this is the problem Australia went through many, many years ago when they had individuals coming from many countries around the close to their borders as well. But the Australians took a different view of it. Unlike Italy and unlike the British, what they would do is they would send their navy out, they would collect them from the boats, they would bring them back to where they came from and burn the boat or the dinghy. So they couldn't do it again. And eventually it stopped because they realised there's no point in us taking this chance because we're just going to be brought back again. But we're doing the opposite. We're actually encouraging it in Europe. Like, I think we've lost your line there. We should try and get you back together at some point. Thank you, Lorenzo, for that. Peter, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall, how are you?
I'll come back to Nuala in a second. I know we couldn't get her there a few minutes ago. But sorry, Peter, go ahead.
Yeah, Niall, listen, it boils down to a couple of simple things. I think, first of all, is the issue of democracy and the issue of where power really lies in society. Like I've spoken to you before many times about, you know, over 70% of our legislation comes from the European Union, and that's all at the behest of big corporations who call the shots, essentially. And they were doing the same with, you know, we've seen it with the bank bailout many years ago, where austerity was imposed on the people of Ireland, and that's over 43% of the total European banking debt through the bank bailout. And we saw that through the devastation of our public and social services. And now we see a further erosion of our sovereignty, like with giving power again to a group of technocrats, so-called experts in a room in Brussels deciding who should take what based on an inflated, out of control, leprechaun economics GDP figure as well. So we're going to have to pay for the privilege of opting into this anti-democratic pact, which again is going to be rushed through without any democratic consultation through the organs of the state and through consultation with the people. Why isn't it put to a vote in the context of a referendum to the people decide on the policy of the state?
It can be put to a referendum under Article 27, I think it is. We can have what they call an ordinary referendum, provided the majority of senators are in the Oireachtas, sign a petition, hand it to the president, and then at the president's discretion, he can call what they call an ordinary referendum, which doesn't have to be constitutional.
There's an opt-out. There is previous, like one of your previous callers spoke about the Treaty of Amsterdam in 1998, which offers an opt-out for people. And for countries as well, for the UK and Ireland, Ireland specifically as well. We saw other, you know, through the Lisbon Treaty and other elements as well, we saw that as well, where it could have been moved towards an opt-out. But again, the politicians...
But we did have an opportunity to opt-out. Well, all of Europe had an opportunity to opt-out. And by the way, it wasn't a landslide defeat 3 weeks ago when it was voted for, but in the European Parliament. You know, if a few more... Yeah, that's right. If a few more MEPs had voted no, it wouldn't have went through. All our MEPs were the best boys and girls in the class. They all stuck their hand up, with the exception of one who didn't turn up. And they all put their hands up and said, yes, we have the biggest bunch of lefties as MEPs in this country that you've ever come across. The two or three that said no for different reasons, by the way.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. They're not true lefties, because true lefties believe in democracy. They don't believe in these anti-democratic institutions. They don't believe in issues that are impacting the working class, most of all in Ireland. Like, we see the devastation of the public services. The housing issue is out of control. More and more people are struggling to find an affordable place to live. 300,000 people hidden homeless. 10,000 people in Dublin homeless. We see a million people on hospital waiting lists. We see people struggling to get proper special needs assessment. People are meeting every day of the week are struggling living in family homes. Young couples. It's outrageous, and yet they're putting more...
And Simon Harris's priority, of course, Simon Harris's priority in his first week of being Taoiseach is going over to recognise the state of Palestine. You know, so we can really see where our priorities lie. And don't get me wrong, I think all those things are important too.
But the genesis of... Look at the bigger issue of immigration as well. Why is it being used? And nobody's actually touched on this in the discussion around it, but an issue is around low wages. And recently, the central bank made a report about 3 years ago to say we needed about 50,000, 60,000 migrant workers in to work at low-paid jobs. And you saw during the period of COVID, for instance, there was an opportunity then to increase wages against the big profits that were being made and the big transfer of wealth during that period. But what did IBEC, the Irish Business Employers Confederation, have recently lobbied to stop increasing the minimum wage from €12.70 onwards? And now I read a report last week that one in two Ukrainians that have come to Galway are now working. Why wouldn't they be working in low-paid jobs? Because they're not paying for accommodation. Mm. So again, it's creating huge division, pull up against native workers here in Ireland who are struggling as well to keep a roof over their head and keep their bills paid.
So where do we stand with this? You know, and a lot of what you're saying there, you know, Theresa obviously has reiterated that earlier on. Where do we stand with this EU migration pact at the moment? I mean, it looks like, I mean, listening to John McGurk, it's a done deal. There's no way this is going to change. They are going to vote this in. It will be voted in by the end of next month. So where do we stand? We've basically, it's too late. We've lost our sovereignty, haven't we? Because well, blame your MEPs for that.
Well, no, I think we should start. Democracy starts from the ground up. And, we, you know, I have no faith in any of the political parties, to be honest with you. And I think what's important is to put pressure on all the politicians are knocking the people's doors. They're doing it during the council elections and the local elections and the general elections, European elections, and say to them, what's your position? Do you opt out of this treaty without being put to the people? Isn't that quite simple in any democracy?
But it's going to be too late. But hang on. They're going to get this in before the election. It's way too late. This will be a done deal in the next couple of weeks. So it's been debated today. I think it's today, actually. In the Oireachtas, the Minister for Justice will be talking to, answering questions to Michael Mack too. And they're only giving it a half a day. Now, a half a day in the Oireachtas is literally an hour and a half, 2 hours at the most. That's how important our sovereignty is, that it gets an hour and a half in the Oireachtas. You know what I mean?
Well, it's actually not being debated. What's happening is Helen McEntee, nobody in Ireland has confidence in, least of all the guards. You know, a person who's completely out of touch with reality. She's going in and going to address the Shannon for probably an hour or two or whatever, and then afterwards there'll be very few questions asked and it's going to be rubber stamped. We should just get rid of the facade in Oireachtas and Ireland. We should just get rid of actually the Punch and Judy politics that happens in Dáil Éireann and say, where does power really lie, and look at Europe and look at we're just lapdogs and vassals for the European elites. That's what we are, and we need to stand up in Ireland for what's best for the people of our country, the country that we love and the country that we see so much devastation happening all over our heads. But people will rise up at one point, I guarantee it, because I've seen it with the referendum results. You've seen it with people have had enough of the nonsense that the government are trying to ram down people's throat and stand up for ordinary working class people in Ireland who are struggling to get by day to day with bread and butter issues, and all we want to be is heard and listened to and respected, and our voice should be heard.
Okay, so stay there, Peter, if you want, just for a second. I'll go to Nuala as well. Nuala, hi, how are you?
Not too bad at all.
Yeah, I don't know where you were there a second ago when I went to you. Anyway, the EU migration pact, I mean, we're losing our sovereignty. Does that bother you, or are you happy for the EU to take control?
No, I'm not, because I think our own government is trying to finish off what Cromwell done, and that's the replacement. That's the bad word now if you say replacement. Mm. But it is replacement, really, because I worked with a guy. And he had 56 brothers and sisters because his father had a number of clandestine wives. So now, as is, that person is entitled to bring all these, plus their kids in. So we've only a small population of Ireland, and it was 3.8 in 2001. Now it's over 5 million. Now it's not that. As far as I can see, people have had less kids. Irish people have down to one or two. So it's not because Irish people are having more kids. I think we have begun to replace our population. And is that what we want? I mean, if people have a vote on it, is that what they want? If that's what they want, let them have it. But people have to have the right to have a say.
Yeah, I do accept our population has increased, and I do accept that, you know, our country has become more diverse, and I do accept, by the way, that much of that diversity is quite a positive thing for Ireland and for our economy, because we've got a lot of people from all over the world working in hospitality, working in, you know, our healthcare system. Without them, we would have been snookered, and the economy wouldn't have grown the way it's grown at the moment. But in saying that, you know, we do need to take control of it. That's the problem, isn't it?
Oh, we do. And like, if you see, the reason for an awful lot of this migration is failed US and NATO policies. They go into countries, destroy them, and then all the people have to move away. You talk about Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Libya, and because the state of Libya now, then it causes an awful lot of migration from Africa, because there is no proper state in Libya. So it's all caused by NATO countries and the US. Mm-hmm. And yet these countries should be the ones to take them. If they destroy and upset people in a certain area, surely they should be the ones to take it. Like, say, Denmark itself was into Iraq. Mm-hmm. Now, that wasn't sanctioned by the UN. Mm-hmm. So why is it that...
By the way, ironically enough, Denmark are the country who opted out of the EU migration pact, by the way.
Yeah, and they were in Iraq and they were in Afghanistan as well. So that has caused an awful... What they've done in there has caused massive migration and displacement of people. They didn't bring democracy to any of those places. They just walked out in the end, didn't they, after 20 years?
Well, you can go back even a little bit further there. When we took out people like Saddam Hussein and many other dictators in the Middle East or in those regions, what we did essentially, although these people were dictators and horrible people, but in saying that, we destabilized these areas by taking these people out.
The last state of the man worse than the first. Mm. We haven't really improved any of the places. We haven't been involved. Well, at least I don't think we have, and I hope we haven't been involved in any of these kind of things.
Only on peacekeeping missions, I think, Neil.
We've never been colonized. We've been colonized, and we haven't colonized any place else. So all these countries, like Belgium, is colonized, had colonies in Africa. You know, even the Netherlands, even Germany, all these people, they were in lording it over all these people in Africa and North Africa as well. And then they kind of push everything over on us.
Okay. Thank you for that, Nuala. Let me just go to Stephen as well. Stephen, hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm not bad at all. I'm definitely against one fact. If McAtee says it's a good thing, it's not a good thing. If the government says one thing's good, it's not. What good have they actually given Ireland in the last 8 or 10 years? Mm. Nothing. Mm. This is just Ireland bowing down to the EU, abdicating all responsibility as per normal. But we do have the laws already in place and they don't enact them. That's just pure and simple. They said that
it's almost by design, isn't it? If we make a mess of it and pretend we're not implementing the laws and then offer them the steel from the EU, sure, they'll just take it. It'll be grand.
Yeah, they said all these things about using the European database. The European database has been there. They could have used it if they'd wanted to use it.
They haven't used it, no. So
if we're actually signing up to this, there's absolutely no guarantee under this completely reckless, and I would nearly say anti-Irish racist government, that they're going to ever actually use the database. And sure, if they're coming from Africa, India, or I'm not blaming Indians, I'm just specific countries, sure, they're not even going to have.
No. The only thing that'll ever be on a database, if they ever go and actually use it properly, whether they're doing fingerprinting, is if an individual had come into Europe to another country and came to the attention of the authorities in another country. That's the only thing that'll ever be on the database. You know, if Johnny from Africa or wherever he's from comes to Ireland, we're not able to get information on his criminal record, most likely in, you know, some country in the world that may not even keep those kind of records on file. Or we don't have connections with. I'm running rapidly out of time, unfortunately, and I have to get to a lot of people. Stephen, I'm sorry for cutting everybody a little bit short. Madeline, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall, how's it going? Some great speakers on there today.
Yes, there absolutely was. I found Teresa's contribution very interesting, by the way, as well. But Madeline, you know, the EU Migration Pact, is it better than what we have? Or it almost does seem by design that we make a complete mess of migration, or I should say immigration in this country, and then we offer the public this kind of notion that we can do things better by giving control to Europe?
I don't believe they actually know themselves what they're actually signing up for. And it's very evident when people come knocking at the door looking for question, and they're standing there with their mouth open and they cannot answer any of the questions that the public are asking. So I don't think they know. I don't think they know themselves. They should have went to a referendum. The dogs on the street are barking that Ireland is definitely full. This is absolutely ridiculous. And the way Irish people are being treated in light of, say, Tent City over there at the IPAS buildings. When in the history of Ireland has that ever been allowed anywhere that people could just set up home there and destroy?
Sure, it wasn't allowed 7 years ago. I talked about it 7 years ago on the radio when Irish people set up tents along the canals. They were removed by Dublin City Council very quickly.
So this is, I mean, this is a, this country is run by a so-called government, and they have allowed this to happen. They're allowing the Gardaí to walk all over the Irish people. I'm looking at footage all the week there. They're there to serve and protect us. They are doing nothing but walking all over the Irish people and protecting these handful of migrants. You were asking earlier what people did. Did they email, write to their TDs or whatever? I actually hand wrote a letter to Michael D. Higgins, spelling it all out. And I went into the GPO. I said, nice touch, I'll go into the GPO and post it, register it from there.
Yeah.
And I couldn't, the queues were so long of foreigners collecting social welfare, I had to leave. I had to leave.
So did you post your letter? Did you post your letter?
Oh, I did. And I posted on the 1st of April, and I have not to date received a reply.
Oh, you might, you'll probably get a, you'll probably get a standard presidential reply saying the president is
I read it and I talked about all his wonderful speeches, which do not tally up with the state of this country. The country has been ghettoised, it's been destroyed, and the whole plan for the future was to have people living in the equivalent of chicken coops. Because that's the sort of housing that they're offering these people. They're literally, my dog, when he went on his holidays to the kennels, had bigger spaces. Yeah. So this is all disgraceful. It's anti-humanitarian. And that programme that was on the telly there last week, I like the title, Ireland is Full. Very cleverly edited. The way they made it look like they were looking at both sides of the arguments. But my God, were they leaning totally towards left.
Well, the only thing I will say in comparative, say, to or some of the RTE stuff that I've seen, at least they did interview people on both sides, and they did keep the context in. I know John McGurk was a contributor, so was Paul Trevoux. Paul Trevoux was very good as well, a few other people. So I think they did keep the context in. The only thing I found a little bit weird was they allowed the NGOs to give out complete misinformation in regarding to screening and all that kind of stuff. They should have corrected
Nick
that.
Anderson.
Yeah, but they should have corrected that. Yeah.
Absolutely disgraceful. Telling us the government knew more about the people coming into the country, that is absolute bullshit.
Of course it, well, of course it's bullshit. But I mean, Grip Media corrected that the next day. But I thought it should have been up to Virgin Media to correct that on a note at the end of the show, maybe, or whatever, you know.
The cheat of him, all he was doing was securing his nice, tidy 90 grand or 100 grand a year job. At the end of the day, you should not be allowed to get off a plane into an airport with no documentation. And that's the basic rules, the basic laws of any country. And it is ridiculous what is happening here.
Do you accept what Helen McEntee says? She says her hands are tied, that, you know, this is all tied up in legislation, that, you know, they're taking the country to court constantly. We've seen one individual who has been sent home on a charter plane, deported, you know, when he's halfway home, and there's an injunction in the High Court to bring him back again.
No, like you just said there, when they had the scandemic there, look at the rules they made up every bloody day. If you went out for a €9 meal, you were going to be healthy for the rest of your life. They can do what they like with what they like. And the government are an absolute shambles. And Helen McEntee is right on top of that list. She's an absolute disgrace. And people need to get out and protest and march against all this, what is happening in our country. Or we're not going to have a country to call our own. And it's slipping away from us. It's in grave peril now. We're at the end of it now if this pact gets through.
Okay, stay there for a second. Let me go to Nolene as well. Nolene, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall, how are you?
Good. Nolene, the EU migration pact, you know, are you happy? Well, you clearly, I don't think anyone's happy to hand over the sovereignty to Europe. But I mean, do you believe there's anything we can do about it? Are we stuck with it?
Well, hopefully not. I do think, you know, I've just been listening to everybody speak, and I have to say, I have to agree with them all. It's got to the stage now where Ireland is like slipping away from our hands, basically. Like, I have no problem with somebody coming in who wants to come here on a working visa, or somebody, you know, I have people who migrated to Ireland, you know, and now they're struggling to find a house because it's been swept from underneath them. Or, you know, a friend of mine is from an African country and she came here 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
She's even afraid because she left a certain country in Africa and she saw all the trouble that she left. And she said to me that she's seen all the remnants of what happened 25 years ago starting to creep in here.
Yeah.
And she's scared as well because she's experienced firsthand. Like, not to say everybody is like that way.
No, I wouldn't think so. No. Yeah, but she's scared. A lot of people are concerned because, you know, they see Ireland changing. And I accept that. I understand why people would feel that way.
Mm. But I think we are a sovereign nation, and the fact that, you know, I think this is what it's brought the spirit back of being a sovereign nation. Me personally, and has brought me back to my roots, so to speak. And I just feel, I just think it's something that Ireland is not capable of managing. Imagine 30,000 people arriving within a month into Ireland. Mm-hmm. Where the hell are you going to put them all?
But this is what I tried to explain earlier on. We have a housing crisis, and you know the government get excited about building 20 or 30,000 houses per year. If you're bringing in 30,000 people, and that's not including people who come here legitimately to the visa process to Ireland. So the 30,000 that the EU Migration Pact talks about are asylum seekers, people seeking international protection. That doesn't include the amount of people who move to Ireland legitimately, you know, from America moving to work with Google or whatever it happens to be. Where are we going to get the houses for all of these people? We can't build houses that quickly. The housing crisis is going to get worse and worse and worse to a point where, you know, what we're seeing in Tent City at the moment in Mount Street is just going to, it's going to explode. It's going to get worse than it is. And I don't know if anyone's been up there recently. It's not just one lane anymore. It's like three full streets on both sides.
Yeah, I actually drove by it coming back from work there just before I got home. But I remember speaking to a guy in Mr. Price, and he was from Somalia. And I says, well, you know, what's your story? And he said he was 7 years in Sweden. 7 years in Sweden. And the only reason why he came over here to Ireland was it was legal. He could work legal in the country.
Yeah.
So, you know, like you said, you most of them are migrant workers. You have to define what is what. And unfortunately, maybe the ones who genuinely need help are getting mixed up all in the system. And we don't know who's who and who's what and who really needs to help. And you're just going to have an influx of people. And I believe, is it that they said that we have to look after them and give them housing and everything else?
Oh, yeah.
Anybody can come around and say, oh, yeah, I'm fleeing from such and such a country. Yet they don't have the paperwork.
Yeah, I think I'm going to re-identify from some other nationality and come back to Ireland, go out of the country, come back in again and seek international protection. Angela, hi, how are you? Sorry,
Oh, Jesus. You know, Niall, what's happening to our beautiful little country?
Mm.
What is happening to it? It's absolutely heartbreaking. I'm actually close to tears just thinking about it, about all the young people that are out there and what they're going to have to grow up around. And, you know, this the reason they're not going to send this or have it as a referendum is because they know the answer. They know the answer. They know people will say no.
Of course they
will. They know people don't want them in here. So it's going through. It's definitely going through. And like there was a post up in my local town. I won't mention who. I won't, you know.
Yeah.
And it was two people who have come over from the Ukraine, want to set up a business here, and are looking for a house. A nice, you know, two-bedroomed house. And I put up, I wasn't rude. I was like, are ye crazy? Coming over with nowhere to live, looking for a house that they're going to have on the ARP program, 800 quid, and they can put 500 towards it a month. And they think they're going to get a two- or three-bedroomed house here for 1,300. Like, it's... I just don't understand it, Niall. I really don't. And don't get me started on the undocumented coming in. Like, I'm at the point now where I'm like, let's just get the feck out of Europe. That's the way I'm looking at it. Because I don't see
that beyond the realms of possibility over the next 10 years, by the way.
Yeah.
Nigel Farage said yesterday, he said, I now feel even better about the fact that we had a Brexit in the United Kingdom. He was talking about the EU Migration Pact at the time. Yeah.
I said it back then, and I was called crazy. I was like, we should go with them. We should have gone with them. And I was called crazy. You know, and it's like, are you not looking at what is happening around? That, yet again, they want to bring in 30,000 people here. Where are they going to live? Where are they going to eat? Everywhere's shutting down. you know, you've got prices are going up on everything. I couldn't believe there again. Diesel's gone up again. You know, petrol's gone up again. It's like
the alcohol went up yesterday, by the way, which is probably not happy for the Irish. Alcohol went up yesterday too. Diageo put alcohol up.
You know, it's just, I don't know what they're doing. And I'm going to say something here now, and I know I'm going to be lambasted again for it. But I tell you one thing, I feel sorry for Simon Harris because he's been landed right in the shit with this.
Mm.
He has been landed with it, like, you know. A week after he's gone in, and it, suddenly there's this, you know. Leo saw it coming. He saw it coming, and he said, I am gone. Before this happened.
You kind of sound like you're feeling sorry for Simon Harris. You know, Simon Harris knew this was coming. If he felt that way and felt that this isn't the job for him, he could have said no.
No, he could have. But you know what? He'd be like anyone out there. And I'm telling you, everyone can give out and shout like feck against him. But if you were given the opportunity to go in and have a pension for 160 grand, if you last 2 weeks, you'd do it. You know? And anyone who went into that job was going to get it. So I actually think he has one big set of Leroy-y to take over this country with what's going on.
I don't know if he has a big set of Leroy-y's at all, to be honest with you, because if he had a set of Leroy-y's, he'd actually do something about it. I have to go to Tony and Patricia just before I finish. Tony, hi, very quickly. Sorry, I'm really rushed now. Go ahead, Tony.
Now you're rushed. No, I just wanted to put a point forward. I think this government is just trying to do as much damage to the country and to the Irish people as that they can possibly do, because they know at this stage
I often think that, Tony, but what would be the intention of wanting to damage their own country? I often wonder about that.
It's the hatred that they have for working class people. It's the only thing I can think of. It's the only thing, but just like Helen McEntee has a hatred for the circumstance that happened with her father, and she blames people on that.
I don't want to bring... I know some people have said that online. By the way, I don't personally believe she's fit for the job. I don't think she's good at a job, but I don't want to bring her personal life into it. I think that's just unfair.
Okay, well, even leaving that personal life over, she's totally incompetent, but she has a hatred for Irish people. For some reason or another, then, we'll say, if you don't want to get personal.
Well, a hatred for some of our opinions, for certain, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, for working class people, like, she's a very, very wealthy woman. She couldn't care less about the working class. And I honestly think that they're putting this country...
Well, all politicians are wealthy, Tony, to some degree.
No, but they're putting the country on a path of destruction that we will never recover from. All the gangsters in the past, Charlie Haughey, Bertie and things like that, we were able to recover. We will never recover from this. We will never, ever recover. Because it will just be an ongoing thing. Thousands and thousands of migrants per year to house, to feed, to give social welfare to. It's just going to be never ending. So what other reason is there for to do that? It's only hatred. It's only hatred. It's nothing else. I can't think of anything else. I don't think you can either, can you?
It baffles me. It actually baffles me that, you know, people would do things that would be contrary to the common good, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. I have thought about it and looked for reasons. I've been on to you before. I said about O'Gorman. He has a hatred of family because he's a gay man. He's never going to have children or grandchildren.
I don't think he is. He is somebody's son. I don't think he's a hatred of families. Hold on, Tony. I completely agree with you. I don't think he should be Minister for Children. I always believe the person who's Minister for Children should have children so they have an understanding.
Niall.
I think he's crap at his job. But, you know, that's...
He'll never hold a baby in his arms.
Well, he might if he surrogates one or if he adopts one or whatever. Tony, let's not make it personal. I think he's shit at his job. That's fine. Let's leave it at that.
He's never going to hold his own flesh and blood in his arm and have an unconditional love for that child or that grandchild.
He might if he surrogates a child.
He doesn't know how it feels. So he doesn't care.
So you don't believe from that point of view he should be Minister for Children? Right, okay. Okay.
I don't think he should be involved in any... I don't think he should have a say in the future of our country.
And what about Simon Harris? What about Simon Harris?
He's worse.
Can I ask you, Tony, is there anybody in government you think is doing a good job? Anybody?
In government, but just like if Carol Nolan, you have Matthew McGrath, people like that, that speaking up for the Irish people. I have been constantly saying, in walk, I speak to my colleagues, I'm pleading with them, just go out on the 7th of June and vote for someone who will speak up for the Irish people, because as it is, we have a very limited amount of people that is speaking up for Irish people. But, I mean, like, you could nearly count them on one hand. The rest of them are weak, pathetic men and women. There's okay. Not even strong women there.
Okay. Oh,
Simon Harris, like, be honest now, is there a weaker man? Is there a weaker man that you can look at and go, he looks weak?
Well, no, I haven't seen good leadership in this country in quite a long time.
He's absolutely pathetic, he is.
Yeah, I would have said the same about Leo Varadkar. I actually did like Leo Varadkar in the earlier days. And I thought it was good to get him in his Taoiseach. I thought he would have done a good job. But he completely, and he had some great ideas, and I believe he had the right intentions, but he lacked leadership. No leadership skills.
He lacked the balls to go through with his beliefs.
Yeah, I agree with you.
2015, yeah. He had the right beliefs.
I think Simon Harris just sings to the choir, to be honest with you. He just says what he believes the NGOs want him to say. Tony, sorry, I'm really pushed for time. I need to go to Patricia before I finish. Patricia, hi.
Hi, Niall. My point today is we don't have enough room in this country at this point in time for any more people. And if anybody reads the Irish Times today and the Hick reports that came out regarding some of these centres they've set up around the country, there are asylum seeker families aside in those with a couple of hundred men. The biggest thing in common with all those centres that were actually inspected was the fear of the families inside with these immigrant men themselves with the drugs and the drink. And if you have that fear from immigrants of all these countries that have come in, of asylum seeker males, how do the Irish people feel when the government won't even listen to us? But I hope that report will be brought back to Mr. Donnelly from the HSE and look into it, where there was a child also of infant station inside those centres. This is human trafficking at the end of the day, and it needs to stop by the Irish government, full stop. The other report that came out of McIntyre today was that the airports would be enforced with larger fines. Those fines should have been there a long time ago and implemented from day one regarding immigration and people coming in. We have people that have come into this country. We don't know who they are, whether they have a passport or they haven't a passport. We have planes passing through Shannon Airport from the US with military weapons and soldiers in those planes. We're wide open in this country as to who has come in and who has come from these eastern countries regarding the Taliban and all those organisations inside this country, and we don't know who is who at this stage and what risks our country and our lives are at until time goes on along the line. And it needs to stop. We do have an opt-out option with Denmark, and it should be implemented. But I'm putting it out there to the Irish people, the only people that have the choice to stop this is us. And we need to take this country to a standstill at this point in time. Everything needs to stop to show this government enough is enough. And what you've already brought in, cater for them with the Irish people at the end of the day and stop the human trafficking, what's going on, and the prostitution of children in state care homes in this country at this point in time. And go back to the domestic works that we need of housing and healthcare and everything else in this country, and look after the country as a whole, not be looking after Brussels and not looking after the EU.
Listen, thank you very much, Patricia. I could spend the whole day, and it's very well said, a lot of what you said there. Thank you to everybody who got involved in the show today. So many people. We could have filled 4 hours. I was looking there earlier on. It is trending, of course, on Twitter. It's trending on Facebook. A lot of people are very concerned, not just because it's the EU migration pact. That's part, obviously, of the wider thing. But for people, it's the principle of handing over sovereignty to Brussels. You know, we do respect, well, some of us do respect the fact that we're in the EU, we're part of something bigger, and decisions are made every day, and we can be part of those decisions with our European MEPs. Sadly, the bunch of European MEPs that we have currently at the moment, I urge you not to vote for them again. They're a bunch of woke lefties who put their hand up for everything. Most of them, anyway. And I would urge you also to understand that most of our laws come from Europe. But as of yet, up to now, we have retained most of our sovereignty, because with those directives that come from Europe, we can decide we still have control over our own laws. Currently, we have control over immigration laws. We're not implementing that control. We have failed to do so over the last 2 years. What we have done has been nothing but reckless. We heard the Minister last week for Justice suggesting the laws aren't good enough, that she can't get people out of the country. We can't even deport people because they end up in the courts fighting their deportation orders. We give them voluntary deportation orders. They don't leave the country. We don't even know how many people are here anymore. We've lost track of it. We don't have the numbers. Any number that the government has given you and any number that you might hear in RT, you could probably double it, because the amount of people that are here that we don't even know about, the ones that are meant to be deported over the last 3 or 4 years who haven't gone home, who are still here somewhere wandering around the country, maybe working in some job for cash. We don't know. They're people we don't know who they are. Many of them, we don't even know their identities. And let's be 100% clear, when it comes to immigration in Ireland, it's extremely important that we all have a humanitarian bone in our body and that we help people who come from war-torn countries, whose lives are genuinely in danger, families, children, whose houses have been blown up in Syria, or houses have been blown up maybe in parts of Ukraine or wherever it happens to be. It's important that we help people. But we can't be here for everybody. And we can't be here for economic migrants. No other country will accept that legally. We cannot allow people to come to Ireland with no papers, no documentation, no idea who they are, and not even check who they are. The NGOs will have you believe we fingerprint everybody and do a security check. And according to Nick Anderson, we know more about them than we do about you. That's untrue. And Grip Media have proved that. The Garda Síochána do not check for a criminal background. That is not what they're checking for. We have no idea who they are and what they have done. We cannot leave our borders wide open like this. And now we've decided, because we're so bad at it, that let's just let Europe do it instead. Let's just let Europe take control of our laws and tell us how many people we can and can't let into the country. It can only get worse. The government says, no, we're going to have detention centres up near Dublin Airport. We'll process people quicker. But they could do that right now if they wanted. There's nothing stopping them. As John McGurk said earlier on from Grip Media, there's no impediment in law stopping them doing that right now. But they won't do it. So they're going to leave it up to Europe. And then when the laws come in 2 years' time from the EU Migration Pact, what makes you think for 1 minute they will actually implement the laws then? They won't. They will continue to do what we're doing, but even more. So you will stand up, talk to your local politicians when they come to the door, and make sure they understand exactly what it is they are voting for. By the way, lots of news coming in. Just to mention as well, Anita Keegan and her sister Suzanne and Lorraine are walking in as we speak into the courtrooms after the inquest into the Stardust tragedy. If I can just play this little bit of audio of Anita Keegan and what she had to say.
Anita Keegan, how are you feeling today?
Very nervous, really and truly very nervous. Just hoping that we get the verdict we wait so long for.
43 years later, fingers crossed you will.
There you go, that was Anita Keegan.
Anita Keegan, how are you feeling today?
I do apologise. Sorry about that. Anita Keegan outside the court today, and they're expecting the verdict at 2 o'clock. For those who've been following the case, of course, it's a 12-person jury made up of 7 women and 5 men, and essentially deciding who is at fault when it comes to the Stardust, that tragedy that happened in Ireland, took so many lives. Also, by the way, just one or two WhatsApp messages. I think they're gone there. We should leave it there for the moment anyway. Thank you for all your comments that come in today as well. They're not doing a good job for the Irish people. Somebody says Ireland should use an opt-out the same as Denmark. Jason said surely the Irish taxpayer has a say, referendum. Yes, we could have a referendum, but that's up to the president. Another person says, Claire says, opt out of the Immigration Pact immediately. Geraldine says, hi, listen to your show. I want the government to opt out of the EU Migration Pact. James says, needs to be put to the referendum now. Instead of telling us how great it'll be, let the people decide. Dennis says, but sure, there is no point in having a referendum. They wouldn't respect the vote anyway, and we'd have to vote again and again and again. And that's probably true too. Thank you for everyone who got involved in the show. Please remember, we love to give you this platform. We have heard some wonderful callers today, some great callers that we haven't heard actually before, Teresa in particular, with some great points of view. That's what the show is about. It's giving you an opportunity, uncensored, to say what you want on the air and say how you feel an opportunity you won't get on radio. It's an opportunity you won't be given by Joe Duffy. It's an opportunity you won't be given by any of the radio stations. We will give you that opportunity here. We do it every day. We don't get paid. So please do donate or subscribe to our website if you can, so we can continue to do this every single day. www.nileboylan.com is the website you can go to. And don't forget, by the way, everybody who goes to the website and registers on the website for a subscription, not just registered, but for a subscription, we put you in a draw and we give away one of our Niall Boylan mugs every single day. All right, so thank you very much indeed. We shall talk to you again tomorrow. Until then, have a great day.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.